Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host, and I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. And you can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter. I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags Nonprofit U, AME Church, or Church and Community. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account, and you'll find a link to open the account on the episodes page. You can also email me questions at consulting@valeriesleonard.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find a Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is at Nonprofit U. We'll be taking questions by phone and from my chat room at about the 20-minute mark, and the call-in number is 347-884-8121. Today's episode is the role of church and community. I'm sorry, the role of the church in community development. We'll discuss the history of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, or the AME Church, and its impact on community and society in particular, and the role of the church in general and its responsibility to community. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions and participate in live chat at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Nonprofit professionals, educators, and community stakeholders are especially encouraged to call in and share your stories. And forgive me for leaving out some of our most important people, our pastors and ministers. Please feel free to call in. It'll be interesting to hear your perspective. Our guest for today is Reverend Albert D. Tyson III. He's the presiding elder of the North District Chicago Conference of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. The AME Church was founded in 1787 and has a mission to minister to the social, spiritual, and physical development of all people. Elder Tyson is highly involved in the AME Church and the community and civic affairs of Chicago and beyond. His resume is extensive and time doesn't permit me to share it all, but I'm going to share a few highlights. Elder Tyson is a member of the Board of Examiners for the Chicago Conference African Methodist Episcopal Church, and he has served as the Vice President and Parliamentarian of the Board of Directors for the Interfaith Organizing Project, or IOP. Elder Tyson has also served as the Treasurer and eventually the President of the Near West Side Community Development Corporation, and he is a former member of the Board of Trustees for Chicago City Colleges, and was recently appointed as commissioner with the Chicago Public Building Commission. Elder Tyson has served as an advisor to countless members of the church and clergy, as well as to elected officials and community and civic leaders in Chicago, in the nation, and in Africa. And I will add that he's listened to me whine, whether I knew it or not, and he has shared sage advice, whether I asked for it or not. But it, you know, he has saved me many a time, and he may not know it, so I appreciate that. I want to say thank you for being on the show today, Elder Tyson. It's indeed an honor to have you. Can you tell us a little bit about the AME Church, when it was founded, and some of the impacts the church has made on our nation's public policy, and then more locally, the communities with respect to social and economic development?
Well, first of all, thank you, Sister Valerie, for allowing me this opportunity to share with you and with your listeners as well. As you've already indicated, the AME Church had its origins, the African Methodist Episcopal Church had its origins in 1787, when a group of worshipers were pulled from their knees and told that they had to wait for white worshipers in St. George's Methodist Episcopal Church to finish praying before they could come and pray themselves. As a result of that, a group of black worshipers walked out of the church and felt it was necessary for them to organize their own place of worship. They started off with a self-help organization, which was called the Free African Society, which had as its responsibility just taking care of some of the social and physical needs of the community based on their faith. And then ultimately they organized the church, which became Bethel, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and by 1816 was organized into a denominational structure. So this year, we're celebrating 200 years of our denomination.
Wow. That's staying power. And can you share some of the impact that the church, and when I say the church, I'm now talking about the AME Church specifically, has had on community and in our society over the years?
Well, one of the tenets of our faith, which was espoused by our founder, Richard Allen, was this whole idea of self-help. So the self-help motto and model has been promoted throughout the history of the church. Self-help and the organizing of schools, which led not only to Sunday church schools, but also which led to the formation of several colleges and universities, particularly in those times when our people were not allowed to attend the majority institutions. So Wilberforce University was organized, Morris Brown, Allen University, all of these schools were organized, Edward Waters and Paul Quinn College, organized to provide our young people with an opportunity to get an education with the hopes that they would then come back into the communities, and as they came into the communities would serve as focal points for all sorts of development.
Yes, yes, yes. And wasn't the guy who spearheaded Brown versus Board of Education, wasn't he also an AME minister?
Brown was an AME minister, and it was his daughter that was the focal point of the case.
Okay. So clearly the church has always been on the forefront of community development and social development. And, you know, locally, when we think about a local church having a role in the development of a community, especially in places like Chicago, you know, some of the first things we think about are activities like developing daycare centers, affordable housing, and community centers. But I was reading an essay by Dwight Falk, and he believes that the church has a very unique role to play in community development, and that is to create the conditions or the climate that will actually enable the community as well as its people to thrive and flourish. And I'm assuming from watching you that you agree with the statement, and assuming that you do, what are some of the ways this can be achieved?
Well, the basis of everything that the church wants to do is our faith. So what the church is seeking to do is to create a what we would call a beloved community, which starts with faith and then moves to having a vision for what a community can be. Too often, we've allowed our communities to fall behind or be less than what they really could become. We have memories of what we thought the communities were, but even our memories are somewhat faulty because our communities never became all that they could be, even though they were somewhat self-contained. We've lost even that vision, and what we want to do at this point is to regain the purpose of those early mothers and fathers who saw that just because they were placed in a position by society didn't mean that was where they had to either see themselves or to remain.
Oh, that is awesome. That's a very ambitious vision, but, you know, it's been close to realized before, and I think we can do it again.
I think so.
Yeah, so community development clearly is not for the faint of heart, and you've been on the forefront of developing communities, organizations, and churches for years, and all of the frustrations and the wonderful triumphs that go along with that. And my question to you is, what advice would you give to faith-based organization leaders who are just starting out in the community development arena?
Well, I would take, and I wouldn't want to take it out of context, but I would take a passage of Scripture found in 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, and the 58th verse, which says basically to be steadfast and unmovable, always abounding, basically to stand firm. You've got to understand that, as you've already indicated, it's not for the faint of heart, which means you're going to have stops and starts. You're going to have successes and failures, but it's the completion of the vision that gives you the understanding of what the possibilities are. Something else I would pull from Scripture that serves as a model for us would be Nehemiah and the rebuilding of the wall of Jerusalem, as well as the rebuilding of the city. None of that could happen without first rebuilding the people. So that what Nehemiah understood was that in order for us to be what we can be and what our vision is for the future, is that we've got to build these folks, and once we build these people, then we can build the community.
And, you know, the unfortunate thing is, you know, outside of the church, you know, because that growth doesn't happen in 2-year spurts or 4-year spurts, often our elected officials, you know, tend not to focus on that. It's easier to focus on brick and mortar than, you know, I would say bones and muscle.
Yeah, I would agree, because that's more visible. But the question is always is, for me at least, is whether or not that has any long-term value. So if you're talking about building stuff and you're going to be sustained in your building program, so there's always something to build, then there'll always be jobs for folks. There'll always be an increase in an economy that's able to support a neighborhood. There'll be reasons for people to stay where they are instead of looking for someplace else to go to develop some other place, as opposed to that place that has given them life and birth.
Yes, yes, yes. So what are some of the common mistakes that faith-based, and I'll even add community-based organizations, make when they engage in community development?
Well, I think there are four that pretty much come to mind immediately, and one of them may be tucked in with another one. One is to be the failure to be inclusive of community needs. I think the vision has to include the whole community. It has to be able to see what those community needs are. In order to do that, you then got to identify all of the stakeholders, bring all of the stakeholders into the understanding of what it is that you're trying to do, what it is you see that needs to be done, and hear from them their perspectives as well, so that they can add to this entire process. A third thing is financing. Whatever you're going to do is going to require some money. And you can't be afraid of what amounts of money are required, but you have to be realistic about money. You have to be realistic about acquiring money. You have to be realistic about the use of money. You have to be realistic about the accountability that money requires. And then the last thing is to not try to overreach. I think sometimes we try to do too much, and we become discouraged when we try to do too much and discover that we are not able to get it all done. So we fall by the wayside because we should have taken a smaller bite in order to get something accomplished that's going to be for the good of the community.
That's really good food for thought. I know, you know, the challenge in communities like North Lawndale, you know, where I live, you know, we have so many problems, and we also have so many organizations, and even though we have over 200 organizations in various degrees, I guess, of their development, we still have gaps in service. So another problem that we have is lack of, I guess, solid collaboration. You know, you have a core of groups that work together, but just imagine how much more impact we could get if we could somehow organize all of those organizations to have, I guess, a continuum of service and reach more people.
Yeah, and I guess that's a part of identifying, because it doesn't do any good to just identify them. You got to figure out how everybody can work together.
And that sounds so easy, but a lot easier said than done. The last part, working together. And, you know,
that is a whole lot easier said than done.
Oh, my goodness. And one of the apprehensions I hear from the community regarding churches and community development is that the churches are clannish. And, you know, the residents have a lot of nerve, I'll say that. But they'll say that the churches are clannish and are only interested in watching out for their own members and projects. And as a result, in some cases, not all, you know, there seems to be a us versus them mentality among the churches. And then that goes both ways. You know, I've seen it on both ends, you know, with the rank and file community as well. But how do the churches and communities get past all of that and work together and begin to break down some of the barriers?
Well, I think it's, again, an easy thing to say, but everybody has to be of the same mind and spirit for a little while to see whether or not they can get it to work together. Well, if a church has a vision for redeveloping its community, unless that church sits on acres of vacant land, there's no way in my mind that the church can do what it proposes to do without talking to the people who live in that community, who live in the footprint of what they're proposing to do. Again, to find out, how can what we do positively impact where you are? How can what we propose increase your property values? How can what we propose to do provide you with a better opportunity for educating your children? How can what we propose to do provide jobs for those who need to be employed in this neighborhood and in this community? So again, it gets back to that whole idea of creating a collaboration of both church and community. Community being neighbors, businesses, organizations, those who offer social services. You have to figure out how to pull all of that together to get the job done.
Yes. So I want to remind our callers that we will be taking questions in about 3 or 4 minutes. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. We're talking to Presiding Elder Albert Tyson III. So I want to congratulate you on being appointed to being a commissioner with the Chicago Public Building Commission. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the Chicago Public Building Commission is and why a man of the cloth would want to get involved? And then most importantly, how do you respond to critics who say that the clergy need to, quote-unquote, stay in their lane and work to save souls?
Yeah, thank you for the congratulations, and I'm still finding out even more about the Public Building Commission. But just in general, I would say that they're responsible for managing the real estate of the city and the county. And that just takes in a whole lot of stuff when you're talking about the management of real estate, building projects, working together with all of the entities that are part of the city and the county to see to it that their projects are done and done in a way that is going to save taxpayers money. So it's all about management with an idea of how, what's the best way to use the public dollar. In terms of why would a man of the cloth get involved, my question would, why wouldn't a man or a woman of the cloth be involved? I'm not sure what that lane is, because my understanding as a Methodist preacher is that the world is my parish. If the world is my parish, then that does not relegate me to specifically tiny little areas. It means that I have a broadness of ministry that I am required to share in order to uplift wherever there is a need. So there is no tiny lane for me. There is a broad path, and it is in that broad path I'm called to give service.
Okay, great. We have a question from our chat room, and J.P. Paulus, he had a question about whether or not you can give some examples, you know, locally to Chicago, some examples of how the church has worked to help develop communities. I know you did a lot of work on the West Side with IOP, and then you also worked with the New Communities Program on the Near West Side. And, you know, there may be even other examples that I don't know about, but he wanted a couple, you know, real-life examples that you could share.
Yeah, I guess the one that I worked most closely with would have come out of IOP and Near West Side Community Development Corporation. If you will remember, several years ago, the folks who owned the Blackhawks and the Bulls wanted to build a new stadium. And in wanting to build that new stadium, what they proposed to do was to move the people who lived in what was called the footprint out of that footprint. Initially, their intention was to keep the old stadium and to build the new United Center. And the group that I was a part of, which became Near West Side Community Development Corporation, insisted that there was another way to do this. And in doing this, the owners of the stadium, the United Center, the city, and the residents of that community could all benefit. What happened was that they built the United Center, and that the people who were in what was called the footprint had the opportunity to be moved to a neighborhood that was still close to where they had been living. New homes were built for them, and everybody who wanted to stay in the neighborhood had the opportunity to stay in the neighborhood. The city worked very closely with us in making sure that this happened. Department of Planning and Development, as a matter of fact, Alderman Pat Dowell was employed by that department at that time and was also very helpful, along with Ernest Gates and Wilma Ward, in getting all of this accomplished.
Okay, great. We have a question from BTR Insider wanting to know, what is IOP? And I guess when you talk about IOP, you can share some of the experiences. And then another question is, what is the challenge with getting more faith leaders involved in such efforts?
IOP was the Interfaith Organizing Project. I came to Chicago as the pastor of St. Stephen in 1985, in December of 85. And when I came, IOP had already been organized and was trying to find out how they could improve the lives of folks who lived in the city of Chicago. What it was a collaboration of churches that had been pulled together in the Saul Alinsky method of organizing, and we're looking for some things to be involved in, and it's at that point that that the city and the folks who owned the Bulls and the Blackhawks were busy trying to figure out how they were going to put a new stadium in. I don't know if you remember, but at that time they also were talking about bringing the White Sox to the West Side. And it was that gave a reason for existing to the organization. Near West Side Development Corporation became the development arm for IOP, which was supposed to be more responsible for organizing people, for finding out what their needs were, for seeing how those needs could be met. And the two organizations ended up splitting, and Near West went on to develop all of the housing and to work in collaboration with the United Center ownership to develop the James Jordan Boys and Girls Club and do a number of things that have been beneficial, particularly to that Near West Side community.
Oh, that's awesome. And then the second
part of another part of the question.
Yeah, what's the challenge with getting more faith leaders involved in such efforts? You know, I'll say in Lawndale, we probably have at least 200 faith leaders, you know. How do you get more people involved? And I would imagine that this is a question, you know, that resonates with people, you know, from different communities as well.
It is a challenge. part of the challenge, I'm not going to say the challenge is selfishness or parochiality. What I am going to say the challenge is in helping folks to see the big picture. So that when folks are able to see the big picture, what they can understand then is that instead of just getting a slice of the pie, you can get the whole pie. And when you get mm-hmm. the whole pie, you can then determine how the pie is going to be split, as opposed to being satisfied with slivers or with crumbs. So the challenge is to get folk to open their eyes wide and see what yeah. the possibilities are, instead of just being caught up in the narrowness of a small vision.
Okay, I've got a question from Marcus Tabb in the chat room, and then there is also a caller. I'm going to take the caller first, okay, and then I'll come back to Marcus Tabb's question in the chat room. Okay, we have a caller from area code 331-229-8395. Did you have a question for Presiding Elder Tyson? She or he has dropped the call. So I'll go back to Reverend Marcus Tabb's question. He asked, from his reference from Nehemiah, how can the church better invest in its people and help build a community when our communities are struggling with joblessness, lack of education, housing, et cetera?
Yeah, that's exactly why the church needs to be involved in the community, because of the things that the community lacks. Most of our churches have people who have a particular set of skills. The question is, how do you marshal those skills into opportunities for providing development in a particular community? So, as an example, every church has literate people. So when you have literate people, what you can do is you can reach out to your children in the neighborhood, pull them together, and provide them with opportunities to increase their ability to desire to learn. Our children are mm-hmm. smart. They just don't always get the opportunities that they could be provided with. You can pull the men together in your congregation and say to the men, we want to not necessarily start a construction company, but there are things that all of you can do because you're all very handy. Why can't we start mm-hmm. either in the neighborhood or with our church members and do some small repairs until mm-hmm. we have increased the ability of our folks to live at a better level? We do raise some money, and it may not always be as much money as we like, but why aren't there some small projects in the neighborhood and in the community that we can go ahead and invest in? I think some of our pastors may only be concerned about living day to day, and you have to look beyond the day to day to see what can mm-hmm. I do to assist my community in being the community I'd like to see it be.
Wow, that is beautiful. It's a lot of hard work. I'm sweating just listening to you describe it. But that's really what it takes, right? You know, we can write all the glamorous proposals we want, and, you know, and then when we see people in the photo op standing in front of, you know, this building for this ribbon cutting and the other, we don't hear about the humble beginnings and all of that sweat equity that went before.
Right.
And then we have another question from our chat room, BTR Insider. Isn't this happening already, but it's not being publicized enough?
Well, I think that's probably true. We never publicize enough of what's going on, which then gives naysayers and people who have little faith the opportunity to say that there's nothing happening. Just as a very brief example, one of the reasons why we have church meetings is so that the folks in the church can see that there's stuff going on in their church. If you only come on Sunday morning, then you think nothing is happening except Sunday morning. But you're involved in the activity and the life of the church. You have the opportunity to see there's a lot that the church is doing. You just haven't been doing enough.
Right, right. a lot of heavy lifting, and fixing lives is really hard, really hard work. Okay, we have come to, I guess, our normal ending point of 2:30. There is, one question I'd like to ask you before we go, and this is a question about civic engagement. I think it's pretty timely, right about now. So assuming that you believe that civic engagement is important to the healthy development of any community, what role do you see the church and faith-based organizations playing in civic engagement? And if you can provide any specifics as to how they can get started.
Yeah, I think, and everybody doesn't agree, but I think every pastor ought to be involved in the neighborhood where the church is. So one of the more immediate things that you can do is find out who your alderman is and go to the alderman's meetings. Find out what the interests of the community are, because they will generally be expressed in some way in the alderman's meetings. You can go to the beat meetings of the police or host them in the church and find out what the residents of that community are concerned about. One of the problems that we have in many of our churches is that the churches used to be neighborhood churches. Now too many of our churches are commuter churches. And because they're commuter churches, there's less of an interest in what's happening in that particular neighborhood. But if that's where the property is, if that's where the building is, then there's got to be some interest expressed in what goes on in that neighborhood. And I think that that pastor and maybe small committees of members should be involved in whatever organizations are pushing things to happen in the community where the church is. You can't do that without being involved with the people who are living there.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, and I have another question from the chat room. This is from J.P. Paulus. He says, and if people don't mind staying for an extra minute wondering, is there a good way to help pastors empower other people to lead the community development effort? And in other words, we shouldn't just put all the weight on the pastors. We need to do things to help you guys, help us, right?
Yeah. The good leaders make leaders. So it's not just a responsibility that falls solely on the pastor. I think the pastor has a responsibility for being able to identify those folks who can take the vision and run with, who have skills that ought to be employed and used, not just within the church, but within the community as well. You utilize all the talents and all the skills, and it just makes the job a whole lot easier. But some of that requires both an ardor for it. You got to want to do it. You also have to have some training in order to know the directions that you ought to go. And you have to have a personality that's conducive to working with other folks.
Yes, yes, yes. All righty, so we've come to the end of our show, and I'd like to thank Reverend Albert D. Tyson, the presiding elder of the North District and the Chicago Conference AME Church, for being a guest today. Elder Tyson, would you care to share any parting thoughts, and most importantly, tell us how we can reach you. Folks are all over the boards are saying, how can we reach you? How can we reach you? So that's evident that you struck the chord. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I think we don't do enough of what we can do, and we don't know enough about what has happened. So that sometimes we look at something as a mountain that is insurmountable, without understanding that mountain can be climbed, but you got to do it one step at a time. And so I would hope that people who have as a part of their dream, their vision, their goal, the development of communities, would just go ahead and get started and pull together those folks and understand, as you've already said, that this thing is not going to happen overnight. It's going to be something that requires a lot of sweat equity, a lot of effort. It's going to involve a lot of collaboration. There will be appointments and disappointments, but the goal ought always be bigger than the parts, so that as you move forward, you can realize what you're looking for. Now, in terms of people getting in touch with me, what is your recommendation? Should I give them my cell phone number? Should I make up a number and tell them to call that number? Should I give my email address?
Yeah, give a phone number, and if you don't mind, I can also update the episode. You know, I do a little slideshow for every episode, and I put some of the pictures that you have on your Facebook page, and I can also include your contact information. But for people who are listening now, you know, if you have an email address and a phone number, I think that would be helpful.
Okay, my email, and I hope everybody will hear it clearly, is the same as my name. So it is A.D., as in Dillard, Tyson the Third, A.D.T.Y.S.O.N.I.I.I. at AOL.com. And that's either all capital letters or all the smaller letters. So it's, again, A.D.T.Y.S.O.N.I.I.I. at AOL.com. My cell number, and I need to say this before I give it out, I will either answer it or I won't answer it. But if you leave a message, I'll get back to you. So the cell phone number is 312-550-6429. That's 312-550-6429.
Okay, and then I will make sure that I include a slide on, you know, on this episode so that people who listen in the future can have that handy as well.
That's right.
So I want to thank our listening audience for listening to Nonprofit U Blog Radio Talk Show. The talk show will be available for download within about an hour. And I encourage you, you know, strongly, you know, listen to it again and then share it in your networks. Be sure to tune in next week when our guest will be Evelyn Ross. And Evelyn is the Executive Director of the NEBC Employment Resources Center. She works with youth and figures out ways to place them in jobs that will lead to industry-recognized certifications. So I'm looking forward to yet another lively discussion next week. So until then, take care, and thanks again, Reverend Tyson.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, bye-bye.